Live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studios, this is Bloomberg Daybreak for Tuesday, September 15th, 2020. Coming up this hour.
Job cuts on Wall Street. Citigroup is cutting staff after pausing for the pandemic.
A powerful but plodding Hurricane Sally is crawling toward the northern Gulf Coast.
And the International Energy Agency says the oil market is even more fragile because of a resurgence of the pandemic.
Dozens of New York City school staff members test positive for the coronavirus. Plus, there will be changes to the Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade. I'm Michael Barr. More ahead.
I'm John Stashower in sports. The Giants lost their season opener to the Steelers, and a deal's in place for the sale of the Mets.
That's all straight ahead on Bloomberg Daybreak. On Bloomberg 1130 New York, Bloomberg 99.1 Washington, D.C., Bloomberg 1061 Boston, Bloomberg 960 San Francisco, Sirius XM 119, and around the world on BloombergRadio.com and via the Bloomberg Business app.
Good morning, I'm Karen Moscow.
And I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by Withum, a forward-thinking advisory and accounting firm helping clients to be in a position of strength in the new reality of business. Learn about their innovative solutions by visiting Withum.com.
It is 5:01 on Wall Street. Futures are higher this morning. S&P futures up about 16 points. Dow futures up 127. NASDAQ futures up 72. The DAX in Germany is up less than a tenth of a percent. The CAC in Paris up 0.25%. And the FTSE 100 up 0.7%. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd, yield 0.67%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.6% or 22 cents at $37.48 a barrel. And COMEX gold up 0.5% or $10.60 at $19.74.20 an ounce. This data check brought to you by SEI. Asset managers don't get results that are off the charts when their solutions are off the shelf. Learn how SEI's operating platform can turn infrastructure into a competitive advantage at SEIC.com/IMS. Nathan.
Karen, we begin this morning with job cuts on Wall Street. Citigroup is going to resume staff reductions this week. And we get the story from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
The bank says the cuts will affect less than 1% of the global workforce. And with recent hiring, Citi says headcount probably won't show any drops. Still, the reductions come as Citigroup faces a likely revenue drop and another increase to loan loss reserves this quarter as the pandemic drags on. Banks have resumed job cuts in recent weeks after pledging en masse to pause such actions earlier this year. Jeff Bellinger, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Jeff, thank you. Meanwhile, JPMorgan Chase says working at home is affecting worker productivity. So the biggest U.S. bank is now urging more workers to return to offices over the coming weeks. The lender is also concerned staff are missing out on learning opportunities and being able to bounce ideas off each other.
The International Energy Agency says the outlook for global oil markets has grown, quote, even more fragile as a resurgent pandemic derails the recovery in demand. The IEA, which advises major economies, trimmed forecasts for fuel consumption for the rest of the year and predicted that oil inventories, which rebounded to record levels in July, won't subside as sharply as anticipated.
Residents along the Gulf Coast are bracing for another round of dangerous weather with a powerful hurricane once again headed their way. We get the very latest from Bloomberg meteorologist Rob Carolyn. Rob.
Nathan and Karen, Hurricane Sally is moving very slowly off the Gulf Coast of Mississippi this morning, and where it's going to make landfall is still a bit up in the air. The steering currents have weakened quite a bit as the storm has strengthened. Anywhere from the New Orleans area to as far east as Pensacola needs to be paying attention to this storm. Best guess right now that it makes a landfall fairly close to Pascagoula, Mississippi by early tomorrow morning. The big threat with the storm is going to be a tidal surge of over 10 feet, anywhere from 10 to 15 inches of rain and winds up to 100 miles an hour. I'm Rob Carolyn, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Rob, thanks. We'll check in with Rob for the latest on the hurricane throughout the morning. We now turn to another natural disaster affecting millions up and down the West Coast, dozens of wildfires. President Trump got a briefing on the situation in California. It quickly turned into a discussion about science. Ed Baxter has that story from our Bloomberg 960 newsroom in San Francisco.
The president's position seems pretty clear.
When you have years of leaves, dried leaves on the ground, it just sets it up. It's really a fuel for a fire.
But Governor Gavin Newsom told him there needs to be a talk about climate change.
We obviously feel very strongly that the hots are getting hotter, the dries are getting drier.
California Secretary of Natural Resources Wade Crawford said, follow science, to which the president responded.
It'll start getting cooler.
You just watch. I wish science agreed with you.
Well, I don't think science knows, actually.
In San Francisco, I'm Ed Baxter, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Ed, thank you. Oracle's bid for TikTok's U.S. operations is now headed for a national security review. It will also have to win President Trump's blessing. Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin says the deal would create a unit that would be headquartered in the U.S. and create 20,000 jobs.
In Asia, China's economy is holding its recovery momentum. More from Bloomberg Daybreak Asia anchor Doug Krisner.
The August numbers on industrial production and retail sales beat estimates, and the jobless rate declined. For China's central bank, the data will likely vindicate a relatively restrained approach to stimulus for the moment. Bloomberg Intelligence says the economy is still running below its growth potential, and the door remains open for the PBOC to guide interest rates incrementally lower by year-end. I'm Doug Krisner, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Doug, thank you. Staying in Asia, shares of Sony dropped more than 2%. Bloomberg News has learned the Japanese electronics company is cutting its estimated PlayStation 5 production because of problems with chips for the console. Sony is expected to reveal launch and pricing plans for the PlayStation 5 tomorrow.
And investors will be watching Apple today as it kicks off a broad slate of new products at a virtual event. More from Bloomberg's Charlie Pellett.
Look for upgrades to two of its most important hardware lines beyond the iPhone. Sources tell Bloomberg the Cupertino-based technology giant will debut an Apple Watch, likely to be called the Series 6, with features such as a faster processor and a blood oxygen meter. The company is also planning a new low-end model to help fend off cheaper offerings from rivals such as Fitbit. The Apple Watch has become one of the company's best-selling devices, making it the biggest contributor to Apple's wearables and accessories division. Charlie Pellett, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Charlie, thank you. Ray Dalio's having a very bad year. So very bad, in fact, that the billionaire risks losing his coveted title as king of hedge funds. Dalio's $148 billion Bridgewater Associates has run up hefty losses this year, even as rivals have minted money in the topsy-turvy markets. The damage as of August, an 18.6% drop in the flagship Pure Alpha 2 fund.
And shares of Nikola are down 8% in early trading. Bloomberg News has learned the Securities and Exchange Commission is examining the company over a short seller's fraud allegations. This is Bloomberg. And at 5:07 on Wall Street, we check the latest world and national news headlines. Good morning, Michael Barr.
Good morning, Nathan. Dozens of New York City public school staff members have tested positive for COVID-19. Mayor Bill de Blasio says the city has tested almost 17,000 Department of Education staffers. 55 of them tested positive since DOE employees returned to school to prepare for the start of the new semester. Meanwhile, the More United Federation of Teachers Caucus held a day of action protests about the safety of opening schools to students in a few days. President Trump held an event with the Latino voters in Phoenix to an indoor crowd.
I know this is supposed to be, the fake news. I said that this is supposed to be a roundtable, but it looks like a rally. But it is a rally because we have each other.
Trump went on to say he was very pleased with how his campaign has been doing with Latino voters. President Trump will host more than 700 guests on the South Lawn of the White House to witness the sealing of the agreements between Israel and the United Arab Emirates and between Israel and Bahrain. A top official at the Department of Health and Human Services, Michael Caputo, went on a rant if there is a contested election. In a Facebook video, Caputo says that he believes the president is going to win the election, that Joe Biden will fail to concede, and that Trump supporters should carry their guns and buy up ammunition now just in case. Democratic vice presidential nominee Kamala Harris participated in a virtual grassroots fundraiser last night. Harris attacked Trump's personality, saying there is nothing joyful about the president.
There is nothing joyful about him. Mm-hmm. There is nothing about him that inspires joy. And it's such a shame.
The president also included Hillary Clinton, the fundraiser, I should say, with Hillary Clinton, Maya Rudolph, and Amy Poehler. Macy's says that its Thanksgiving Day parade in Manhattan will be produced solely as a television event because of the coronavirus. The traditional 2.5-mile parade route will not be used this year. Staging for parade elements will be focused solely in and around the Herald Square area. Mayor Bill de Blasio.
You will be able to feel the spirit and the joy of that day on television, online.
De Blasio says previously selected regional high school and college marching band performances will be deferred to the next parade. Global News 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Neither.
Okay, Michael, thanks. It's 5:09 on Wall Street and time for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report. Good morning, John Stanshire.
Good morning, Nathan. The Giants have the worst record in the NFL over the last three seasons. Now they have their third head coach in the last 4 years. Game one under Joe Judge. More of the same. Daniel Jones did throw two touchdown passes to Darius Slayton, but in between those scores, the Steelers scored 23 unanswered points. Pittsburgh and Ben Roethlisberger's return from the elbow injury that kept him out most of last season won 26-16, spoiling Judge's coaching debut.
I'm proud of the way the team fought for 60 minutes. That's something I really wanted to see. You guys asked me earlier in the week what I wanted to see from this team. I wanted to see a team who played together for 60 minutes and fought regardless of score, circumstance, or situation. And I saw that. I'm proud of the way our guys played.
It was a rough night for Saquon Barkley. 15 carries, 6 yards. Seemed like every time he got the handoff, there was a Steeler to tackle him. Pittsburgh back, Benny Snell Jr. rushed for 113 yards. Tennessee with a late field goal won at Denver, 16-14. Steve Cohen is a lifelong Mets fan. The billionaire hedge fund king thought he had a deal last year to buy 80% of the team for $2.6 billion. It fell through because current owner Jeff Wilpon wanted to retain control of the decision-making, but now Cohen's set to get 95% ownership for a reported $2.4 billion and final say. His deep pockets should make Mets fans happy. The deal needs the approval of 23 of the 30 MLB owners. Dallas Stars will play for the Stanley Cup. First time in 20 years, they won the West over heavily favored Vegas in 5 games. Last night down 2-0, third period, came back to win in overtime. The Islanders are down 3-1. They'll have Game 5 with Tampa Bay tonight. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Nathan?
And John, New Jersey gamblers set a nationwide record for the most money bet on sports in a single month, plunking down almost $668 million in August on events that included baseball, basketball, and hockey seasons interrupted by the coronavirus. That August record smashed the previous one of $614 million. That was set in Nevada in November of 2019. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Sports is brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and European stocks are climbing for a third day, supported by improving Chinese economic data and positive results coming from retailers. U.S. stock index futures are advancing. The euro is strengthening. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 19 points, Dow futures up 149, and NASDAQ futures up 82. The DAX in Germany is up about 0.2%. 10-year Treasury down 1/32nd yield, 0.67%. The yield on the 2-year, 0.13%. NYMEX crude oil is up 0.9% or 34 cents at $37.60 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.6% or $11.30 at $19.75 an ounce. The euro 1.1885 against the dollar, British pound 1.2887, and the yen 105.78. And today we are watching for a report on Empire Manufacturing out at 8:30 Wall Street time, along with the Import Price Index. Industrial production and capacity utilization are out at 9:15, and Adobe's among companies scheduled to report earnings today. That's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael, good morning.
Good morning, Karen. A slow-moving hurricane, Sally, has forecasters trying to determine exactly where and when the powerful storm will come ashore. Forecasters say along with the wind, Sally will bring a life-threatening storm surge and flash floods to parts of the northern Gulf Coast. Searches continue for people missing amid wildfires in the West. Around 35 people have died. In baseball, after 9 months, Steve Cohen will finally get what he wanted, a deal to acquire the New York Mets. The billionaire reached an agreement with Sterling Partners, a firm backed by the families that own the Mets, to purchase the team. According to Sportico, the deal puts the Mets' valuation at $2.42 billion. The A's split a doubleheader with the Mariners. The Orioles won. Global news 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
Okay, Michael, thanks. It's 5:19 on Wall Street and live from the Bloomberg Interactive Broker Studios. This is Bloomberg Daybreak. Good morning. I'm Nathan Hager. Well, adapting to the pandemic is leading to some uncomfortable decisions on Wall Street. After putting them on pause earlier this year, Citigroup is bringing back job cuts now. And J.P. Morgan apparently is finding working from home may not be all it's cracked up to be. Here with more on these stories this morning, Bloomberg Markets reporter Danny Berger. Good morning, Danny. Let's start with the big news from Citigroup this morning, the return of job cuts, one part of arguably getting back to normal no one wants to hear about. What do we know about Citigroup's plans?
Right. I mean, it is something that's a change for Citi. So it is significant. As you say, this is almost getting back to normal because they had pledged earlier during the pandemic that they wouldn't reduce staff. So here's what we know. We know that this is going to affect less than 1% of their global workforce. In total, they employ just over 200,000. Again, it's not that significant in terms of numbers, but it's significant they're doing it again. If you look at the entirety of the year, though, the net number of employment is going to stay steady because they have hired about 26,000 new employees so far this year. So that about weighs out the cuts that they're likely to make. But a big part of this, if not the driving force, is really Citi's desire to save costs here. They are expecting to see a drop in revenue when it comes to this quarter's earnings.
So when they look at cost cuts, are there any other avenues they have besides looking at human capital?
There certainly is. Actually, one area that we're seeing this effect really throughout major cities is the idea that they can save costs on real estate. You have more people working at home. You don't need to take up space in big city centers. We don't really have this the centralized business district. That model is starting to change. So Citi figures that it can save costs as well by moving people to less expensive cities, offices further away from city centers. And so they think that and along with better governance will help them to reduce some of their other costs.
Well, that segues rather nicely into the next story involving the biggest bank on Wall Street, J.P. Morgan, apparently finding that working from home might not be the perfect solution.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's this really interesting tension we're seeing for these different big offices. JP Morgan, for their part, it was a study done of their employees by KBW, and they found that those who were working from home were less productive. Now, we have heard other stories saying people who are at home tend to work longer hours. They're always accessible. You can get called any time of the day and people know you're there. But perhaps the key here is even if you're working all day, perhaps those hours are less productive. They said, though, that this was especially present in the kids, in the younger workforce. They walked a thin line, trying not to really belabor the point too much when it comes to younger workers. But KBW, again, the firm who ran the study, said that they didn't have, quote, creative combustion when they were at home. And JP Morgan spokesman said they think it's because the younger workers don't have the opportunity to learn when they're in the office with their other coworkers who are perhaps more experienced. They can ask more questions. But across the board, they did see a clear divide. And for that reason, we are seeing banks start to ask their employees to make their way back into offices.
Yeah, and it does raise that interesting question, doesn't it, about whether, this is like the best way to try to cut costs, to have more employees working from home. If they aren't as productive as they are in the office, maybe the cost cuts aren't as desirable as they might be.
It's certainly true. It is a lot for banks to weigh up and really all employers. But the thing is this phenomenon is so new. Who's to say that if this continues, if we have more people constantly working from home, we have a flexible work setup, that people start to adjust? It's fair to say that this has been a strange time for everybody. So again, it's really hard to say, okay, here's this one study. JP Morgan employees are less productive. Let's slam down on the brakes of allowing people to work from home. You know, there's a lot that goes into this. Safety is obviously a big issue as well. You know, I'm here in the city of London, and Mizuho, a Japanese bank, was going to bring employees back starting on Monday in phases. And they said, okay, let's slow this down. We're starting to see rising cases yet again in the UK. It doesn't make sense to bring people back. So, again, that's going to be one of the most important thing. And also for that reason, even banks decide they want to get people back, even if that helps make employees more productive, they're still, most of what we've seen are capping the amount of people in the office at about 50%.
Yeah, lots for bank CEOs to think about as we all try to adjust to what's been happening with this pandemic. Bloomberg Markets reporter Danny Berger, thanks so much for this. Great having you on this morning. And just looking at shares of Citigroup in the pre-market on word that job cuts could be coming back this week, Citi shares are higher by 1.3% in early trading. S&P futures are higher as well by 21 points. Dow futures up 167 and NASDAQ futures gain of 93 points. This is Bloomberg. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by New York Community Bank. Ask about their My Community Interest Checking with free New York Community Bank online and mobile banking. Earn more, get more. Visit them anytime at mynycb.com.
Broadcasting live from the Bloomberg Interactive Brokers Studio in New York. Bloomberg 1130 to Washington, D.C. Bloomberg 991 to Boston. Bloomberg 1061 to San Francisco. Bloomberg 960 to the country. Sirius XM Channel 119 and around the globe. The Bloomberg Business App and BloombergRadio.com. This is Bloomberg Daybreak.
And it's 5:30 on Wall Street. Good morning. I'm Karen Moscow.
I'm Nathan Hager. Bloomberg Daybreak is brought to you by BNY Mellon's Pershing. Learn why the world's most sophisticated advisory firms and broker-dealers rely on Pershing to help them improve profitability, create efficiency, attract talent, and manage risk at Pershing.com.
And we're just about 4 hours away from the opening of U.S. trading. Let's get you up to date on the news you need to know at this hour. U.S. futures are higher following yesterday's gains on Wall Street, which saw all three major indexes gain at least 1.2%.
Citigroup will resume job cuts this week after pausing them for the pandemic. The bank says the cuts will affect less than 1% of its global workforce. Citi has more than 200,000 employees.
A powerful but plodding Hurricane Sally is crawling toward the northern Gulf Coast. Rain from the storm's outer bands has been pummeling northwest Florida. President Trump has issued an emergency declaration for parts of Louisiana, Mississippi, and Alabama.
Well, the president has dismissed concerns over climate change on a visit to California, which has been suffering from deadly wildfires. The president's been critical of how forests are managed, but Wade Crowfoot, California's Natural Resources Secretary, argued that global warming is the real problem.
If we ignore that science and sort of put our head in the sand and think it's all about vegetation management, we're not going to succeed together protecting Californians.
Okay. It'll start getting cooler.
I wish science agreed with you.
Hey, well, I don't think science knows, actually.
Wildfires in Oregon, California, and Washington state have killed at least 35 people since last month.
FedEx delivers its fiscal first quarter results after the market closed today. And Bloomberg's Larry Kofsky has a preview.
After several years of underperforming expectations, Bloomberg Intelligence says fiscal 2021 could finally be the year when FedEx delivers for investors. Surging demand coupled with new surcharges are expected to produce a profit of about $2.69 a share on revenue of more than $17.5 billion. But FedEx is not without its challenges, including higher costs associated with operating a safe network, expansion to seven-day-a-week delivery, and a shift to more residential deliveries. Larry Kofsky, Bloomberg Daybreak.
All right, Larry, thanks. Shares of Nikola are down about 3% in early trading. Bloomberg News has learned the Securities and Exchange Commission is examining Nikola over a short seller's fraud allegations. Hindenburg Research says the electric truck maker deceived investors about its business prospects. Nikola has denied the accusations.
And S&P futures are higher, up 22 points. Dow futures up 171. NASDAQ futures up 107. The 10-year Treasury down 3/32, yield 0.68%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.13%. Straight ahead, the latest world and national news. And this is Bloomberg.
All right, Karen, thank you. It is 5:33 on Wall Street, and Michael Barr has more on what's going on around the world. Michael?
Thank you very much, Nathan. Dozens of New York City public school staff members have tested positive for COVID-19. Mayor Bill de Blasio says the city has tested almost 17,000 Department of Education staffers. 55 of them tested positive since DOE employees returned to school to prepare for the start of the new semester. Meanwhile, the MORE, United Federation of Teachers Caucus, held a day of action protest about the safety of opening schools to students in a few days. The world's largest Thanksgiving Day parade is the latest casualty of the coronavirus. New York City Mayor Bill de Blasio says the annual Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade will go virtual this year.
Will not be the same parade we're used to. It will be a different kind of event. They're reinventing the event. for this moment in history, and you will be able to feel the spirit and the joy of that day on television, online.
The traditional 2.5-mile parade route would not be used this year. The staging for parade elements will be focused solely in and around the Herald Square area for the solely TV event. Rochester Mayor Lovie Warren fired the police chief and suspended her top lawyer and communications director in the continuing upheaval over the suffocation death of Daniel Prude.
This initial look has shown that we have a pervasive problem in the Rochester Police Department, one that views everything through the eyes of the badge and not the citizens we serve.
Chief LaRon Singletary had announced his retirement last week as part of a major shakeup of the city's police leadership, but said he would stay on through the end of the month. Instead, Warren permanently relieved him. President Donald Trump is set to preside over the signing of historic diplomatic deals between Israel and two Gulf Arab nations. Today's ceremony at the White House will host more than 700 guests on the South Lawn to witness the agreements between Israel and the United Arab Emirates and between Israel and Bahrain. A manhunt continues near Los Angeles after two sheriff's deputies were ambushed during the weekend. The officers were sworn in only 14 months ago. Ron Hernandez is the president of the Association for L.A. Deputy Sheriffs.
There's nothing that can justify what happened Saturday evening. I think we're all in agreement on that.
The two deputies who were shot are expected to survive. Global News 24 hours a day, on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg. Nathan.
All right, Michael, thanks. It's 5:35 on Wall Street and time for the Burden Accountants and Advisors Sports Report. Here is John Stashire.
Thanks, Nathan. Opening night for the Giants. It started well. A recovered fumble led to a field goal. Daniel Jones threw a 41-yard touchdown pass to Darius Slayton. Big Blue led the Steelers 10-3, but then 23 unanswered points by Pittsburgh with Ben Roethlisberger throwing three TD passes, two to Juju Smith-Schuster. Jones and Slayton hooked up again late, but the Steelers won 26-16. Saquon Barkley had a 38-yard catch and run, but when they handed off to him, 15 carries, 6 yards, and Jones was intercepted twice. Costly one in the third quarter left the Giants empty after a 19-play, 87-yard drive. Tennessee won at Denver 16-14 on a Stephen Gostkowski field goal. The longtime Patriot had missed four kicks earlier. It's a done deal, at least pending approval of 23 of the 30 owners. Steve Cohen will own 95% of the Mets, with the Wilpon family keeping the other five. The price tag, $2.4 billion, down a little from the deal that fell through earlier this year. It's still the most anyone has ever paid for a sports franchise in North America. Jeff Passan covers baseball for ESPN.
This is a landscape-shifting deal in Major League Baseball. You talked about the $14 billion net worth that Steve Cohen has. Only one owner in all of sports, not all of baseball, all of sports, and that's Steve Ballmer with the Los Angeles Clippers, has a higher net worth.
Mets are in Philadelphia tonight. Yankees host Toronto. The Islander playoff run, longest they've had in 27 years, could end tonight. Tampa Bay leads the series 3-1. It's over in the West. Dallas upset Vegas in five games, won last night in overtime. John Stashower, Bloomberg Sports. Thank you.
Thanks, John. It's 5:37 on Wall Street and time for the Tri-State Business Report with Bloomberg's Ed Corey.
Connecticut is suing ExxonMobil over alleged deception about climate change. Attorney General William Tong announced the lawsuit Monday. It accuses the oil giant of violating the Connecticut Unfair Trade Practices Act by misleading the public about how fossil fuels drive global temperature rise. Business groups from New York City, Long Island, and Westchester pleaded with President Trump Monday to secure a funding deal to rescue the region and its transportation system from fiscal crisis. They say local governments may have to lay off police officers, firefighters, and emergency service personnel. SL Green Realty opened its new $3.3 billion office skyscraper Monday in a neighborhood that's among Manhattan's busiest, but is now unusually quiet. The tower's big reveal comes at an awkward time for New York, as many of the city's workers stay home for fear of contracting the coronavirus. That's your Bloomberg Tri-State Business Report. I'm Ed Corey.
All right, Ed, thanks. It's 5:38 on Wall Street. Bloomberg Radio is on the air from San Francisco to New York, London to Hong Kong. Let's check in with our global news team for some of the top stories heard on our 300 affiliate radio stations around the world.
I'm Courtney Donahoe on KTRH in Houston. The International Energy Agency said the outlook for oil markets has grown more fragile.
I'm Jeff Bullinger, and on WLW in Cincinnati, I'm reporting the CEO of Cincinnati-based Kroger tells Bloomberg demand for groceries will remain strong even after the pandemic subsides.
I'm Roger Hearing on Bloomberg DAB Digital Radio in London. We're reporting on the growth in jobless figures, with young people being the worst affected group.
I'm Steve Podolsky on 1010 Winds in New York. We're talking about Citigroup resuming job cuts, ending a pledge to hold off during the pandemic.
I'm Ed Corey on WWJ in Detroit. I'm reporting Fiat Chrysler will shrink a dividend that would be paid to shareholders in connection with its merger with PSA Group.
And those are some of the stories our 2,700 Bloomberg journalists and analysts are working on this morning around the world. Economists say industrial output probably slowed in August, rising 1% as the impact of the coronavirus continued to squeeze America's economy. Federal Reserve issues that data at 9:15 Wall Street time this morning, and Bloomberg's Vinnie Del Giudice reports.
Bloomberg Economics says data on factory employment suggests a recovery in heavy industry is leveling off. Industrial production has been on the rise since May after falling a record 12.8% in April when the coronavirus intensified. The prior record decline, 10.4%, was set in August 1945 at the end of World War II as wartime manufacturing wound down. Also on today's data agenda, the New York Fed's Regional Factory Index. Vinnie Del Giudice, Bloomberg Daybreak.
Thank you, Vinnie. The latest edition of Bloomberg Business Week is online. It is devoted entirely to the November election. Terminal customers can receive a complimentary subscription at MAG Go and listen to Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly right here on Bloomberg Radio, or watch it on YouTube weekdays from 2 to 6 p.m. Wall Street time. Get global business, finance, and tech news on your TV, computer, or mobile device at YouTube.com. Search Bloomberg Global News. Bloomberg Sports was brought to you by Burden Accountants and Advisors. Uncertain about your financial future? Let Burden serve as your trusted advisor and create innovative solutions to help protect you, your family, and your business. Visit BurdenLLP.com.
Markets, headlines, and breaking news 24 hours a day at Bloomberg.com, the Bloomberg Business app, and at Bloomberg Quick Take. This is a Bloomberg Business Flash.
And I'm Karen Moscow, and European stocks are climbing for a third day, supported by improving Chinese economic data and positive results coming from retailers. U.S. stock index futures are advancing. We check the markets every 15 minutes throughout the trading day on Bloomberg. S&P futures up 22 points, Dow futures up 157, NASDAQ futures up 112, the DAX in Germany is up 0.25%. 10-year Treasury down 2/32 yield, 0.68%. Yield on the 2-year, 0.13%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.7% or 63 cents at $37.89 a barrel. COMEX gold up 0.5% or $9.80 at $19.73.50 an ounce. The euro 1.1882 against the dollar. British pound 1.2893. And the yen 105.74. And that's a Bloomberg Business Flash. Now here's Michael Barr with more on what's going on around the world. Michael.
Karen, Sally, now a Category 2 hurricane is set to slam into the Gulf Coast. It will be the third hurricane of the season to strike the area. Dozens of wildfires have produced a thick band of smoke covering the west. Portland is registering the world's most unhealthy air quality in the past few days. The U.S. has issued a new advisory warning against travel to mainland China and Hong Kong, citing the risk of arbitrary detention and arbitrary enforcement of local laws. In the NFL, the Giants lost to the Steelers 26-16. In baseball, billionaire Steve Cohen finally got a deal to acquire the New York Mets. The A's split a doubleheader with the Mariners. The Orioles won. Global news 24 hours a day on air and on Bloomberg Quick Take, powered by more than 2,700 journalists and analysts in more than 120 countries. I'm Michael Barr. This is Bloomberg.
Bloomberg Opinion, informed perspectives, and expert data-driven commentary on breaking news.
It's just before 5:49 on Wall Street. Time to check in with Bloomberg Opinion, and columnist Elisa Martinuzzi is with us now from our London bureau. Elisa's column this morning is about UBS's push to buy Credit Suisse and potentially create one of the biggest banks in Europe. But would it be too big, Elisa?
Well, that is the key question and potentially the key obstacle here, because you already have two very large Swiss banks on their own, UBS and Credit Suisse, and combined their assets would come to something like, you know, more than twice the size of the Swiss GDP. And of course, Switzerland having bailed out UBS during the financial crisis, very conscious of the fact that it does not want to put taxpayers' money at risk ever again. So that an obstacle in and of itself could make the deal very, very difficult and improbable. And add to that the domination and the concentration that the two combined banks would have in the domestic market that would also raise potentially some antitrust issues that would have to be taken, would have to be looked at quite closely.
So you've laid out some pretty strong regulatory hurdles there, but your column argues this morning that regulators should give it a chance. Why?
Well, I think, it does beg the question whether, there are sufficient synergies from putting these two banks together and, whether that ought to be a consideration. You have, two very large wealth managers, UBS clearly being the biggest in the world, which could cut back considerably on their overheads, compliance, back office, research, by putting those two platforms together. You also have complementarity in their investment banks. You have UBS, which is a market leader in equities trading, whereas Credit Suisse has retained a larger footprint in the fixed income space, particularly in the credit markets. So bringing those two together could create a player that may not be quite the size and the breadth of the Wall Street peers, but certainly have a chance to compete with them. And so all those, I think, are worth thinking through and looking at closely, not least because no banking consolidation is going to be easy. They're all going to be complex. But it still seems to be the case that, particularly in Europe, it's in-country deals that offer the upside from synergies, from cost synergies. And without those, you would just have the complexities.
Those kinds of synergies could lead to pretty significant job cuts, though, couldn't they, if those synergies need to be ironed out?
Of course, and we are in the midst of pandemic, and most of those would undoubtedly fall on their home market. So it's difficult at the moment to see the political backing for those types of measures at this juncture. So I think overall at the moment the sense is that it's not a deal that's seen as quite likely, but there is industrial and financial logic to it, which I think spurs a potentially helpful debate for European banks in particular and how to grow from here and reduce their overheads.
So you're thinking that the merger might not be likely, but how seriously do you think UBS Chairman Axel Weber is pursuing this potential lockup?
Well, if you look at some of the local reporting, the local press in Switzerland, he seems to have threatened, according to one report, to move the headquarters away from Switzerland into Germany. Based on that reporting, it seems like he's quite determined. That obviously would be, would be a danger if this was, led entirely by him. There seems to be, according to the same report, unease among other board members, both obviously at the UBS end, but also at the Credit Suisse end, unsurprisingly. We're hearing more of those over the next few days. But at the moment, it does seem to be led, very much by the UBS chairman.
And in our last 30 seconds here, if UBS Credit Suisse isn't as competitive against the major Wall Street banks, I mean, what kind of influence could it have on its European peers?
Well, that's a very good point. I think it would certainly up the game here as well. Europe is really left with only a handful of banks that compete at a global level. Barclays, BNP, Deutsche having pulled out though of the equities trading business. So it would certainly be a more an additional player in that regard.
Bloomberg Opinion columnist Elisa Martinuzzi, thank you. And you can read Elisa's column and more from Bloomberg Opinion at Bloomberg.com/opinion or OPIN. Go on the Bloomberg terminal. Karen?
Nathan, thank you. It is 5:53 on Wall Street. Time for the Bloomberg Law Report. It's brought to you by American Arbitration Association. International trade or business dispute? Resolve faster with the International Center for Dispute Resolution, the leader in alternative dispute resolution around the world, ICDR.org. Let's get to the legal stories we're watching this morning from Bloomberg's Jeff Bellinger.
A federal judge ruled that Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf and his health secretary overstepped with overly restrictive measures to prevent the spread of COVID-19. The Seventh Circuit revived a discrimination lawsuit filed against Union Pacific Railroad by a train conductor who charged he was not recertified because he is hearing impaired. Securities and Exchange Commission wants more details from banks that blame the pandemic for loan losses.
Bloomberg Law. Everything you need on one legal research platform. Guidance, analysis, and Bloomberg Market Intelligence. Find out more at BloombergLaw.com.
And now other legal news we're watching this morning. The Supreme Court is expected to be a key issue this November, with 64% of Americans saying it'll be a very important consideration in their decision about whom to vote for, according to a recent Pew Research survey. President Trump has added 20 names to his so-called shortlist of potential Supreme Court justices. His new potential nominees, all conservatives, include Republican Senators Tom Cotton, Ted Cruz, and Josh Hawley, two former solicitor generals and several appellate judges. For more, Bloomberg's June Grasso speaks to federal judiciary expert Carl Tobias, a professor at the University of Richmond Law School.
By choosing these senators, for example, Cotton tweeted, "It's time for Roe v. Wade to go," after he was named to the list. Is the president choosing these senators for political reasons? Because they're not known for their legal scholarship.
Sure. I think many people on that list were included for exactly that reason, and probably principally for that reason. There are a number as well who are from what are considered to be battleground or swing states, a couple from Florida and nominee from Arizona, trying to help the senators there in some situations like Arizona in a close race and trying to help himself, Trump, win the presidency. And so you see reasons of that sort for a number of nominees.
Turning to the other courts, there are no appellate court vacancies, and Trump has flipped 7 of 13 appeals courts. And now the Senate has been going ahead with confirmations of Trump appointees to the district courts.
Absolutely. As we said, the only vacancies are on the district courts, and when the Senate returned last week, they confirmed 5, and this week they're scheduled to confirm 8, which would then make the number of vacancies 57, where it hasn't been for quite some time, not in Trump's administration, to be sure. It's been as high as 150. So that's an accomplishment and valuable. And all of them this week are from states represented by 2 Democrats, blue states, which is another criticism that I and many others have lodged against this administration. There are 4 for Illinois and 4 for California. And there are 17 emergency vacancies in California. So California really needs to have judges confirmed.
And that's Carl Tobias, a professor at the University of Richmond Law School, speaking with the Bloomberg's June Grasso. Catch more of that interview, plus analysis of the latest legal news, by subscribing to the Bloomberg Law Podcast or downloading the show at Bloomberg.com/podcasts. And attorneys can find exceptional legal research and business development tools at BloombergLaw.com. S&P futures are higher, up about 25 points. Dow futures up 184. NASDAQ futures up 109. 10-year Treasury down 2/32, yield 0.67%, and the yield on the 2-year 0.13%. NYMEX crude oil is up 1.7% at $37.89 a barrel. And Bloomberg Daybreak continues. Top stories straight ahead.